Imagine trying to learn astrophysics without using the word light year, or studying biology without being able to say photosynthesis. That is the dilemma facing deaf students pursuing a career in the sciences, fields where new terminology is coined and communicated on a daily basis. Douglas Quenqua is a freelance writer whose work has appeared in Wired, Fast Company, and primarily in the New York Times, where he wrote about how users of American Sign Language are collaborating to catch up with scientific vocabulary. Douglas, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thank you.
Up until now, how have deaf students communicated terms that they're studying?
It's a lot of improvisation. There's a lot of spelling that goes on. If there's an interpreter in the room, generally what they'll do is the interpreter will probably start out spelling, fingerspelling the terms, and maybe if they have time, they'll agree upon something. You know, they'll say, okay, well, going forward, this will be our sign for organism. This will be our sign for photosynthesis. The problem with that is that everybody then is using their own signs, and when, you know, two hearing impaired people get together and want to talk about the sciences, they are not necessarily using the same words, so to speak. So it's always been a less than ideal solution.
Times Interactive has a little feature comparing some of the terms that we'd find fairly common. I'm thinking adhesion, absolute zero, light year. It takes a great deal of time to spell out, and then on the other side of the screen, there's somebody signing it. Is there a process for the newly signed terms to become official, you know, sort of like a lexicon?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I went into this thinking that there was some sort of board or some sort of authority that oversaw sign language that could make new signs and say, okay, this will be the sign for this going forward. But it was kind of ignorance on my part because it's like any other language. You can't, you know, there's nobody out there that can say, this is the new word we're all going to be using for this from now on. So the way it's happening is it's coming from the ground up, which it sort of has to. You have these new forums online where people are contributing their ideas for what new signs for scientific terms should be. Whether they get adopted is sort of determined by, you know, whether they become popular, whether they enter the regular use, just like with any other language.
Interesting. Deaf scientists apparently used to use videotapes, so now they're using the internet, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that this problem has persisted so long. I think starting in the 70s, people tried to address this issue by exchanging videotapes with signs of scientific terms. They also used manuals. That process had obvious disadvantages to it, and it's probably not a surprise that not a lot of terms ever wound up getting adopted. So it's really kind of a new thing that, you know, now with the boom in broadband and web video, that you now have the ability to put these things online and just have somebody say, here's a short video of me doing a sign for photosynthesis, and people can they can watch it and they can react. They can comment. They can say, I don't like this. I do like it. And one of the great forums for these things is run by Washington University. And it's sort of a wiki. You know, it's like a Wikipedia sort of system where – and it actually, I guess, pulls a little bit from Reddit.com as well. People can vote up or down the signs that they like.
Uh-huh.
So it's very democratic.
And the scientific community, of course, is international. So do American and British and, say, Indian signers have to agree upon these things?
They do not, no. There are separate forums online for British Sign Language and for American Sign Language. I can't say that I know about Indian Sign Language, but I think it's, you know, like any other language. I think that they'll worry about communicating with people in other countries after they can figure out how to communicate with each other first.
So as you said, basically it's street use or lab use, I guess that would be the better term, you know, how people use it, how they adopt it. But I'm thinking of all these scientific terms with tiny distinctions between Y's and C's and X's. I mean, it's difficult for people with full capacity for hearing. How did they get through those little bumps?
You know, it's not easy, and I think that it's one of the many, you know, people who are hearing impaired or deaf are obviously already at somewhat of a disadvantage when it comes to learning technical fields, and I think that this is one of those things that has really held them back for a long time, and it may not seem like a huge problem overall, but if you're hearing impaired and you want to go into the sciences, it is a big problem. It's too much improvisation. It's too much making it up as you go along, and, you know, it's a big problem as well for people in science education, because there's already a worldwide shortage of STEM educators. So if they're going to create more science, you know, technology, engineering, and math teachers, they don't want to be eliminating an entire group of perfectly capable people just basically on a technicality.
Well, Douglas Quenqua, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And that's the freelance writer Douglas Quenqua there. There's more on language and the sciences at wordofmouthradio.org.